Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Let's bring the boom.
No way.
YouTube, what's up? What's happening? Salute. Dunker!
Kendrick should have never.
It's time to hoop it up.
Kendrick should have never dropped that album. I'm very glad that he dropped that album, but oh my goodness. If you were like listening in your car or something, I apologize. For what the
hell? Hey.
You got it. Okay, well, aside from a Kendrick album, we did have plenty of NBA Cup action, some fun games over the weekend, plenty of hoops to discuss. Steve, who has caught your eye over the past few days?
The Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics have caught my eye. Now, they are second in the Eastern Conference, 14-3, 8-1 on the road. For me, it's just the sharpening of the formula for the Celtics. It's not easy to defend a championship. And you got to take a look at the little things that they've been able to do during the stretch at the start of the season. And they're like a tentpole team. Like, I want to see how teams react to what they do. Mm-hmm. And they've caused some pain. Cleveland, not so much fun for them. Minnesota, not so much fun for them. For some reason, they have a hard time with Atlanta, and Golden State did have their number, but they're doing little things just kind of continue to get better. The defensive tricks when they play these teams, and it's Jason Tatum on a big, Al Horford on a wing. Hey, Jason Tatum is now a switch. You don't get these roles. Now you have to work to find a pressure point, but they're so good defensively that there's no easy way. You can counter like Minnesota did and said, hey, that's fine. We'll use Jay McDaniels as a screener. But you don't know what Al Horford's going to do because Al Horford's still pretty good defensively. So it's like, well, he might just stay in a drop. He might be at the level. He might switch. And so they're able to kind of poke at you defensively. Then if they're able to get stops, they're able to force misses, they force you to kind of sustain your offense. They are pushing. There's always the threat of the three-point shot with Boston, but you don't really know who's going to attack and you don't know how they're going to attack. There's a play in that Minnesota game where Minnesota does a really good job getting back in transition, getting matched up, and then you look, and it's Jaylen Brown under the basket posting Dante DiVincenzo with a whole bunch of space. But that could be any Boston Celtic. And I think that's kind of the beauty of their game. We get stops, we push on the other end, we make it tough. I've really enjoyed the work that Jason Tatum has done for the most part. Mm-hmm. Just kind of the little tiny tweaks. So we've seen Boston use him as a screener. To try and attack matchups. You know, hey, he's guarded by defensive player X. That guy feels that they can switch. So we use Tatum as a screener. We get the matchup we want, we go. But they're kind of tweaking that, making adjustments on top of that. He's done a really good job coming from the corner, setting a screen, just putting his hands out like this, which I'm sure if you post it on a social media website, someone would just say illegal screen because no one wants to think these days. They just want to be right about everything. But that's a different story for a different day. But Tatum gets the contact, and then he releases immediately. What that does is, okay, you are switched on to me, but you can't get back in front of me. Derek White's done a great job of getting him the ball right away, and now Jason Tatum is a roller as well. So it's not just the threat of we switch and Jason Tatum attacks. No, we can generate offense out of this. He gets a roll, he either finishes, you rotate, now they're off to the races. Well, the Celtics get you in rotation, it's pretty tough. I think the drives from Tatum have felt better, been stronger, quicker decisions. Now he will still get into his ah-ah bag, but when he's seeing a switch and he's just putting his head down real quick, attacking, I think it's really good for Boston. Jaylen Brown's been steady. I think the bench contributions have been good. Pick a big, depending on what we need, we're going to get it from them. Sam Hauser continues to hold up. Peyton Pritchard knows exactly what his role is, comes in, does it every single night. And so you just have the formula that works, and I just want to give them a salute for that because I think sometimes that can get lost under the radar of, well, Boston's good, we don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You will in the playoffs.
You sure will. And just to quickly add to the Tatum screening point, as we had like the super long Boston screening question on the last episode of the pod, Jason Tatum as a screener, he is screening more this year. It was about 9.9 picks per 100 possessions last year per second spectrum. That is up to nearly 12 per 100 possessions this year. 1.14 points per possession on any trip featuring Jason Tatum as a screener, which is an elite mark. So he's doing some really good stuff on that.
Very true. I also want to give a salute to the Denver Nuggets. If I can pivot real quick, I want to give a salute to the Denver Nuggets. Boy, it sure looks a little bit better with Nikola Jokic. Tell you that much. That man he came seems back to help. Just like, well, 30 points, whatever. I'll just do this every single time. He's been very, very good, and you don't need me to tell you that. I think one of the things I've noticed with Denver, one, they're starting to get exactly what they were looking for from Peyton Watson and Christian Brown. Mm-hmm. Consistently on both ends of the floor, those two are starting to find their rhythm, find their way, and that's helping elevate Denver. That's a good long-term deal for the Nuggets. The other thing I wanted to point out, Russell Westbrook starting to develop some chemistry with old Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. And that two-man game that some people may have pointed and laughed at, getting a little fun. Their pick and rolls is really, hey, Jokic, find a spot on the floor. We're going to set a lower angle screen because, we know you want to go under. But Nikola Jokic is trailing. He hits his big man. Then he sets a screen. You go under. Russell Westbrook's already in the paint. He's still fast. Jokic's role is now he's already in the paint. That's the easy play for them. If you want to go under on a higher screen, that's cool. Rescreen. Guess what? Russell Westbrook's in the paint. Guess where Nikola Jokic is? By the elbow near the paint. That's an added layer to what they do. So, I mean, if they can get Jamal Murray right, I think you don't want to forget and sleep on Denver. Denver's eighth in offensive rating this year. They're 12th in defensive rating. Might not feel that way. Compared to last year, they were fifth in offensive rating, eighth in defensive rating. So they're closer to their formula than some people may expect. So I just wanted to kind of keep a head up and give a salute to the Nuggets because, again, that's still a tough place to play, and they're finding their way.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Nikola Jokic continuing to play excellent basketball. Love the Russ shout-out. The energy he's provided. I think I mentioned on the last pod, like the Denver Nuggets, at last check were like first in the league in transition frequency. Like that is a Russ, a figurative and literal driver of that stat, as Denver is generally a team that wants to slow it down and let's be methodical in the half court because you have Jokic and Murray and Aaron Gordon went healthy. Obviously, want him to get back soon. MPJ, you can run all the actions. But Russ getting them into their stuff a little bit earlier. And as you mentioned, more chemistry in Nikola Jokic in the half court. You can see what Denver is trying to build on that front. And then quickly to the Watson and Brown point. They have played 263 minutes together so far this year. Per PPP stats, a plus 11.6 net rating in their minutes together. That is tremendous work right there. If you get that kind of wing defense, you get that kind of gap attacking from Christian Brown. Same thing from Peyton Watson. Both can be used as screeners when necessary, even if it's just to feed a matchup. Both are willing to kind of crash from those corners and generate extra opportunities as offensive rebounders as well. Denver is just a really tough team to deal with. This is going to be two straight years of a top 10 defense. And you know what the half court formula is, particularly late in games. They just need to be healthy when the playoffs roll around.
Hey, give Coach Michael Malone his credit. Give him his just due. Also, the upcoming stretch of games for the Nuggets also intrigues me. They play the Knicks at home, at Utah, at the Clippers, Golden State at home, then at Cleveland. So we're going to get some answers.
Yeah, we are. That's a good group. Did you have anyone else you want to shout out?
No. Who do you want to talk about, Nikias? You want to play the song?
Yes. I've kind of, based on the intro, I was kind of scared of what song that may be a reference to. But no, in all seriousness, I do want to talk about a pair of 11-7 teams. I want to talk about the Orlando Magic, and I want to talk about the Los Angeles Clippers for similar reasons, so that's why I wanted to group them together. But for the Magic, got off to a 3-2 start. Paolo had the 50-point masterpiece. It looked like he was taking the leap. Paolo goes down. The Magic immediately lose their next four games. They can't score. And it's like, oh, no. What's going to happen with this group? How are they going to hold serve without Paolo right now? It helped that the East was and continues to be a little bit of a mess. Standings wise, at the very least. So they didn't fall super far behind, but it's like, okay, what is this about to look like? The Orlando Magic are 8-1 in their last nine games. Offense has been fine-ish. Defense has remained elite. But to the offensive end, I think I have to start with what Franz Wagner has been doing during this stretch. Since Paolo has went down, so starting basically November 1st, 26-6-6 and nearly two steals per game. Over these last nine games is 28-6-7, which is nuts. 59 true shooting percentage, slightly above league average on that front. I think it is encouraging to me, like outside of the box score numbers that are good, but it's encouraging to me that he's been able to ramp up the volume to this degree and to at least find some answers against, he has something that he's comfortable getting to against the coverages that he's seen. I think for Orlando, just process-wise, you want to see him take those steps with this kind of volume. Because he's already shown he can play off of Paolo. He's comfortable playing off of Paolo and attacking cracks that way. we've already have, you know, we also have, like, we want to go into some lineup data, like the Franz plus bench lineups have generally been good for Orlando. So, you know, he can hold serve. The fact that he can ramp it up like this, you bring Paolo back into the mix and slide everybody else into even more natural roles. Like, that feels like a big sign heading into a potential playoff berth for Orlando again. So I like that part. But more specifically, like, Franz hunting these pull-up, these step-back threes has been really interesting to me. What's up, Steve?
I have an issue with this Franz take, but I don't want to interrupt what you're saying because it's given harassment meme between him and Paolo. And I don't know how much I appreciate it.
No, let's talk about it.
Because Paolo was a volume shooter. I was like, man, he inefficient, though. Franz doing the same thing. Boy, golly, I love it. Man, well, so 25 points, 20 shots. And I just wanted Paolo to be acknowledged. That's all. And then we can get back to Franz.
No, I think Paolo is very good. I can only speak for myself. I do agree that that's generally, like, if you are poking at Paolo, because obviously, like, Paolo has his own fan base. The Magic fans love him. There are people that love Paolo. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it, to be clear. So, like, I do agree that the discourse can kind of shape that way to where you poke at some of the Paolo stuff and may not do so with Franz. I can only speak for myself. Like, my bigger issue with Paolo, within this context anyway, like, yes, you want the efficiency to be a little bit better, but for me, it was more like, how quickly are you getting into what you want to do? If you are going to drive, if you are going to get into some of these pull-ups, is this going to be a catch and hold, or are you going? And, like, something that I noted early on, like, it helped that he was knocking down jumpers, again, had the 50-point game. But as we talked about Paolo, and you brought him up, I would say you brought him up first, but as we talked about, I was like, hey, it feels like he's making quicker decisions. Like, that's cool. Like, I just want to see that part.
Okay, continue on.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Carry the heck on, buddy.
Carry the heck on. So that was my thing. It's more processing speed for decision-making speed for Paolo. And with Franz, like, the thing that I've liked about him is that he generally does make quicker / slightly better decisions on the ball. I don't think he's been able to, like, hold up the kind of volume that Paolo can. Like, this is why Paolo's been the number one option. Like, he can assume more of that usage. He can get to his spots a little bit easier than Franz can. And ultimately, when the jumper is going, there just isn't anything you can really do with Paolo. And so with Franz, again, ramping up the scoring volume in particular, has gotten to the rim. He's been able to get to his spots. He's gotten comfortable with that floater around 8 to 10 foot range. And again, like, him hunting out and seeking out these step back threes, he's shooting well on them right now. Per Second Spectrum, he's 11 of 27 on step back threes this year. And he was around 33% on step back threes last year. We will see if that number holds. But the fact that he feels good getting to that step back, if you're hanging too far back in the drop, he can get to that step back if it is a switch and he has a matchup that he likes. He can now mix in the drives with that shot and he feels more comfortable with it. I want him to find some answers as a self-creator and that kind of thing. Because what we saw in the postseason last year, no, the jumpers didn't fall, but it felt like that was just kind of it because the jumpers didn't fall. The drives weren't there to the same degree and he didn't have a shot that he felt comfortable getting to consistently. And it also wasn't falling. And so if he just feels more comfortable process-wise, like, again, the efficiency is great, and I love that part. I just want him to have answers. Because I think that's what helps Orlando get to a, you know, that gives them a higher ceiling in the playoffs offensively. If you now have Paolo who can just kind of bend the game to his will, and then when you send extra attention to him, he can beat double teams with the passing. Now Franz can drive, can get to some self-created looks, and also can make the right passes. Like, I think that just helps Orlando overall. So I'm encouraged by that portion of the program.
I hear that. I think in theory, again, this is all built on what Paolo and Franz can do, their versatility, their scoring, their playmaking, and you build the rest around it, which is kind of why this works. And Franz being able to level up is impressive. It's good. Mm-hmm. He understands the assignment. He knows the shot's going to be there. He continues to hunt. I give a slight level of pushback on the speed of decision-making because I've seen quite a few. We run pistol. We get a switch. Franz posts up for 17 seconds, but I'm going to come off like a hater, but that's fine. I think the important part has been his drives and pick and roll. If you're going to play drop, there's no real hesitation. He's looking to attack the space. He's going to finish. That's a positive sign. You're forcing teams to show help if he does get some of those post-ups, which is a positive sign. And if you can get those two humming, you know what you can do. I think the passing is probably what stood out to me the most. If you look at his assist numbers during this month, you know, he's going from 3 assists a night to you know, 6 or 7. In a scenario where he's now asked to do a lot more. So that, I think, is the most positive sign, where he's not just doing the scoring. So yes, it's volume shooting, but he's also getting more of the playmaking, which allows Orlando to kind of just continue to kind of be a hub to a degree, to where we know what our bigs can do. Tristan Da Silva, I enjoy him playing, but he's got size, he can space, he can defend. You are an Orlando Magic. Jalen Suggs has, I think Jalen Suggs has been pretty aggressive. Like, obviously, hopefully he's okay. You know, him being able to have this moment where Paolo's out, but I don't necessarily have to do more, but I can. So if you're going to play off me, I'm going to take these shots. I'm going to drive. Him being able to be more decisive, I think, is something that will help Orlando down the stretch. And then the bench play is the bench play. Gary Harris has been solid. I think Anthony Black being able to have way more wiggle room to play has been good for them. You mix in some Jet Howard. Obviously, you know what Mo Wagner and Jonathan Isaac do. Orlando just has an identity, and they are very, very, very tough to beat. No one has beat them in the Ozone this year. So, you know, you got to give the Magic salute.
There you go. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Just to the foul low front. Over this 9-game stretch, a 39.3 assist rate, a 6.9 turnover rate, which, again, to the general point with Franz ramping this up, you have the ball in your hands a lot more. You're making more decisions on the ball. The playmaking, as you mentioned, has popped. The assist numbers have gone up, and you're not giving the ball up. It's impressive stuff during the stretch as he's seeing. Again, seeing drop, he's seeing switches, he's seeing two on the ball, and, like, just watching him kind of diagnose, okay, what am I getting? I can just get off the ball if I need to. If we're playing drop, as you mentioned, I can get to these drives, get all the way downhill. Again, I can get to the step back to mix this in, keep you off balance. Ultimately, I can make these pocket passes when necessary. I can make these passes to the corner when necessary. When I do get two on the ball, here's an overhead pass. I'm going to trust Mo to make a play in the short roll. I'm going to trust Goga to make a play in the short roll. Here's a bounce pass if the pocket is wide enough. I can trust my bigs to make these plays. Oh, this is a really aggressive trap. I can just make this advance pass to the corner, and I trust Anthony Black or Gary Harris or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Y'all can make the shot. Y'all can make the plays, because this is an Orlando Magic roster that is full of guys that can take advantage of tilted defenses. And I think that's why there is so much pressure. Probably isn't the right word, but I'll say pressure for the, you know, for time purposes. But, like, that's where the pressure of Franz and Paolo becoming a legit star or superstar level duo helps. Because if they're able to nail that portion, I trust Jalen Suggs against a tilted defense. I trust Anthony Black against a tilted defense. I trust Gary Harris against a tilted defense. If you're putting two on the ball against Paolo in pick and roll, or if you're doubling him on the block, okay, I can trust all these guys to make the right play and keep things going. If you're going to trap me in pick and roll, all right, Gogo will take a dribble and get to this little flip shot, or I can just make this advance to the corner. Mo Wagner, if you do not step up to him in time, he is putting you underneath the basket with the thump. Or he can make the basic reach from there. And so, like, if they can continue to nail that portion, and Franz largely has so far, especially when he's team two on the ball, I just feel better about the process. And so, like, that part's encouraging. And as you brought up the second unit, like, Gary Harris filling gaps, Anthony Black just snatching the backup guard minutes. And he's been really good shooting, not quite there, but he's taking them with confidence, which I think is going to be important for him moving forward. Like, very reductive, but hey, you can't become a better shooter if you are unwilling to take the shots that are there. Defenses give him space, but he's taking them in rhythm, so that helps. Can also get downhill, really good playmaker. And the defense has just been kind of absurd. Actually, on that point, because the foundation of this Orlando Magic group is still defense. They're fourth in defensive rating per cleaning the glass. They've been a top five half-court defense all year long. When you have Jalen Suggs at the point of attack, when you have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who can operate on and off the ball defensively, and even when those two aren't directly involved in action, I think Jamal Mosley, like, he obviously wants his shell defensively, but he trusts those guys to be aggressive off the ball. If Jalen Suggs is at the nail, even if he isn't supposed to be, he trusts that he can get in and get back out if necessary. KCP, strong hands, quick hands. If you try to drive by him while he's at the nail, you're not having a good time. Like, they just do such a good job of swarming and making you uncomfortable. And, like, the quieter thing of this Orlando Magic run, again, very much process peel for me. The thing I kind of yelled about with the Magic last year was, this defense is super good. Why do y'all not get out and transition more than you do? Very quietly, the Orlando Magic, I think, seventh in transition frequency since Paolo's been out. The efficiency numbers haven't been great on that front compared to the rest of the league. But even with that, like, low efficiency in transition is still going to be a higher number than your half-court offense generally. And so, like, them even having the emphasis, let's force turnovers or let's force misses, let's get out and run. Again, the benefit of having so many guys that you trust to grab and go or to take an outlet and dribble and make plays against a scrambling defense. it gives them easier opportunities. And I think they certainly need to find as many of those as they can while Paolo is still out. But I've liked the uptick in pace and the uptick in transition play. Defense remains sound. I've liked what I've seen from Paolo. I mean, I've liked what I've seen from Franz. I've also liked what I saw from Paolo before he went down. But like what I've seen from Franz, I would like for Jalen Suggs to be okay, to your point. Would also like the three-point shooting to kind of return for Jalen Suggs, but more aggressive. He does look more comfortable with the ball in his hands when he is, like, initiating. So that part's good. Goga's done a really good job of filling in for Wendell Carter Jr. once again. And it's done his job on both ends of the floor. And I think it is easier when Goga gets to play in this kind of space if you're putting two on the ball. And defensively, they'll ask him to creep up to the level. And, you know, you're not going to confuse him with Bam out there. But when you do have this kind of length and speed and anticipation behind him, you can afford to be more aggressive with him. And at the end of the day, he is just a big and strong body. So, like, that's not easy to try to get around. And you're dealing with all this help and active hands behind that. So it's just been really good stuff for the Orlando Magic.
I feel it. Now, you know me. You know what I come with.
What's up? Is it schedule time? Or what
yes, exactly. They are 8-0 at home. And you mentioned they are 11-7, which I have not taken a math class in a while, but they are 3-7 on the road. If I could do math, 6 of their next 7 games are on the road.
We are going to find out some stuff about the Orlando Magic. How do I keep doing this?
There's a bonus here.
Okay.
So it's at Charlotte, home against Chicago, 2 games at Brooklyn, at the Knicks, 2 games at the Sixers. Doesn't sound like much, but still, you know, these are teams that are also in the same boat to a degree. Then they come home for a very long homestand. Suns, Thunder, Heat, Boston, Miami, and the Knicks. Of course, there are going to be some hashtag play-in NBA Cup type games in between there mixed in. Mm-hmm. But it gets tricky and interesting very quickly for the Orlando Magic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hey, because well, we are going to find out something for Orlando. And to your point, like, if they're able to stack some wins during the early portion of this run, at the very least, like, they're going to be in prime position for, like, a home court seed with how the rest of the East is shaking out. So we're going to keep an eye on the Orlando Magic. And then shifting to the West, again, I mentioned I had these two teams grouped together. The Clippers also 11-7, 24th in offense, 5th in defense as of Monday morning. They have won their last 3 games without Norman Powell. Get well soon on that front, because Norm has just been incredible for this Clippers team. I start with the defense with them because I just really enjoy the work that they're doing on that end. Like, this has to be the foundation for them, considering, like, you know, obviously Paul George isn't there anymore. They haven't had Kawhi Leonard yet. But watching them work has just been a joy for me. You know, I'm a big fan of what Zubac does defensively. The fact they can get him closer to the level if necessary, can feast in a drop, can contest shots, and do so without fouling most of the time. I think that's very important. When you have a guy like Chris Dunn that you could toss at the point of attack, and again, similar to Jalen Suggs or KCP in Orlando, if he's off the ball, Ty Lue has kind of given him freedom to kind of roam around and poke at things and just wreak havoc and help them force turnovers. I think he's done a really good job. I think the wing room has done a really good job. I think James Harden has really fought defensively. It hasn't just been, James, we are stashing you here, you are going to switch, and then we'll show help. There has still been that. But, like, watching James Harden navigate screens against in a drop, I'm just like, hey, this is the kind of effort you want to see from your star. Not going to make the all-defense case for him, but, like, that's a positive step. Like, to see that kind of buy-in, I think, is important. And if you can get James to just do his job and now can execute multiple jobs, it's not just be in early when you're in help, hey, switch and hold up against post-ups. If you can now also sprinkle in some navigation on top of that, that does add to your scheme versatility and ultimately helps further empower an already really good Clippers defense. So, like, that part has popped for me. And then just kind of zooming out, big picture. Again, Norm Powell was lighting nets on fire before he got hurt. James, going back to James Harden, shot hasn't fallen to the same degree, but him being able to get downhill again, get to the free throw line again, more comfort in the mid-range area. The playmaking has continued to pop as it has pretty much his entire career. Like, pick and roll chemistry with him and Zubac in particular has continued to grow from last year. And when you get late in games, like, he can still just put you in the torture rack. Hey, you guard or random wing, come screen for me. Feed me this matchup. If you put two on the ball, I'm getting off of it. If you don't, I can boogie to, like, the 17-foot range, 14-foot range, 12-foot range. I can get to an assortment of shots, get downhill, get to the free throw line if necessary. So you do still have a possession slash game ender in James Harden that can do these things. And then the Nekias special, like, hey, shout out Amir Coffee, who continues to just be a very good wing on both ends of the floor. Hit shots at a high rate, can attack gaps with, you know, attack closeouts, can fill gaps in that way, keeps things moving. Defensively, he's been fighting. Terrence Mann back to hitting threes. Defenses still aren't treating him as a shooter, but back to knocking down threes. He's also defending well. And so this Clippers team is just tough. They're tough to deal with. They're annoying, for lack of a better word. But, like, this is the formula for them right now, why they don't have the full assortment. We are going to put you in a headlock defensively. We're going to make you work really hard. We're going to show help. We're going to blitz you at the rim if you get there. Dare you to make shots from out there. And on the other end, you know, it's selective transition, especially when James is on the floor, because he does still want to bend the game to his own will. But we can run if someone else gets the outlet. And at the end of the day, James Harden can just poke and prod at your defense. He's still one of the smartest players in league history. He's still one of the best creators that we have in the league. And so I just wanted to give the quick hat tip to the Clippers, who have continued to win despite this. Their defense has been absurd. And to that point, this is four straight games in which they have allowed fewer than 100 points, which is not easy to do in today's NBA, regardless of who their opponent actually is. But no, it's been a blast. It's been a fight, but it's been a blast.
Well, I mean, Golden State and Sacramento is in that mix. So, I mean, yeah. Salute to the Clippers for doing that. I think the key word is the formula that you mentioned. The Clippers understand what they do well and what they have to do to win games. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when you look at a team's record, it's easy to stamp, be like, well, they can't do X in the playoffs. They can't understand what makes them good. That defense is going to keep them hanging around in games. They have that buy-in. It's not easy to score. They have multiple wings. They're not afraid to switch. They feel comfortable with that. So they're going to bring that to the table every single night. The offense, it's going to have its question marks. I mean, even in this massive win over Philadelphia, they had like a 4.5-minute stretch where they didn't make a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter because the defense was doing what it was doing, but they're going to have those stretches, especially against good teams, where they get hit with switches and they're slow. The shot's not making. They're not generating good shots. The movement's not there. They have to figure that out. And I think, to the Clippers' credit, they are becoming more methodical to a degree, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Understanding how to attack matchups. Zubac pick and roll to switch. Okay, let's throw it to Zubac. Is he punishing that post up? Are we getting two on the ball there? That's fine. We still probably need an element of a role. Hey, Chris Dunn, you become a screener. Mm-hmm. Kerry Jones Jr., you become a screener. Now, do you want to switch that? If you're not switching that, we might have a role. Understand the little things they can do in the half court to make things work. The defense gives them a little bit more of that wiggle room, but offensively, they are going to have to find that to kind of figure out how that ceiling is. I think one of the big things was moving Chris Dunn into that starting lineup. 5-2 in those games with Dunn as a starter, 3-0 with the Dunn, Coffee, James Harden, Derrick Jones, Zubac starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So get well soon, Norman Powell, but they're finding a way. Might be that espresso, who knows? I'm glad you mentioned Terrence Mann. Apparently, the man has come back to LAC. Clippers, I mean, it's all about having a good start. Again, this is the Western Conference. And again, you have a bad week and you go from woo buddy to oh buddy very quickly. But it's you got to acknowledge them for their start.
That we do. And I'm glad I just missed Derrick Jones Jr. in my notes, but I think averaged 11 during this recent stretch of play. The comfort inside the arc for DJJ has popped for me. You mentioned the screening portion. That's obviously important. But when he does have to attack, like, again, it's not the ISO package, 12 dribbles, anything like that. But just watching him from, like, the Phoenix days, the Miami days, even the Dallas days, like, the fact that he can set a screen, get the ball, put two dribbles together, get into a comfortable shot, or just make the next read, I think is important growth for him. And even when he's stashed in the corner, again, teams are helping off. But he's shown a lot more comfort in beating those kind of closeouts, the short closes. He's still been able to get to the rim. And so sprinkling that in with timely corner three makes and, again, the length and athleticism that he brings to the defensive end, it's been good stuff for Derrick Jones Jr. too. So didn't want to miss him. I'm glad you shouted him out. It would have been a disservice if we went that Clipper segment without mentioning what he's been doing on both ends. So appreciate you. I think that will probably do it for me on the teams that impressed. As far as teams/players that are making me think, first, I guess just a general level of sadness with all of the injury things with New Orleans and Philly. We got the Zion update from Shams that he's still dealing with the hamstring and it's looking like a mid-December return at earliest. And that's if, you know, they want to bring him back. There's some bigger picture decisions that New Orleans can make with the season if they want to based on how they start the year. But it's just tough. dealing with that amount of bias, and with Zion in particular, you know, you get the stories and stuff about the work that he put in over the offseason and the people that he talked to and the people that he worked with and how he felt, the weight he dropped, et cetera. And then for it to be another injury and another extended absence, like that just stinks on a human level. And then big picture with the Pelicans, as they are missing these bodies and as the record is what it is, it's like, okay, what is the push going to be slash what is it going to look like? And so there's just a general like, hey, what's going on here? Because like we've also like found some silver lines with this Pelican group as they've dealt with all this. Like you've talked about Jose Alvarado and then he also got hurt. I've talked about Brandon Boston, like Brandon Ingram. I think you've also talked about how well he's played. He's been one of, if not the most blitz player in the league because of some of the injuries. Teams are just like, okay, we can just load up and force everyone else to beat us. And I think he's handled that pressure well generally. So like, yeah, just as a basketball fan, I would like for them to get healthy and kind of put some things together because there is a really talented two-way team in there somewhere. But absent of that, like I am starting to wonder like big picture, hey, so what does this season mean? Do they become like a deadline team if they are going to punt things? Like those thoughts are at least starting to form for me. So like that's why the Pelicans are on my mind at the moment. And then with Philly, Joel Embiid missed the last two games with knee swelling. And obviously he hasn't gotten to play a lot. And when he has played, it's clear that he hasn't been 100% yet. So like, again, just as a basketball fan and on a human level, I just want Joel Embiid to be okay. Like obviously the Sixers don't hit their ceiling and they don't hit a high enough floor if Joel Embiid isn't going to be there. But I want him to be there. I obviously want Paul George to be back and healthy so we can see what this team is going to be. Because without those two pieces, you know, like heading in, we did our season preview with Philly. Like heading in, we were both pretty high on what they could be if they stay healthy. And we still had questions about, okay, is the backup front court going to hold up? How strong is the four position going to be? What kind of scheme versatility are they going to really be able to tap into consistently? Like those are questions with the healthy version. Without Paul George, without Joel Embiid, they are smaller. They're going to switch a bunch. They're going to struggle to grab boards. And offensively, they're going to see a bunch of switches. And depending on who's out there with like Tyrese Maxey and Jarrett McCain, and both of those guys have played well, oh, we can just shrink the floor and make your drives really tough on top of all of this. And so like, we haven't gotten to see the full complement. We haven't gotten to see the full breadth of what Philly could be. So like, I just want to see that. And I do wonder just how the brass is taking in this season. Because obviously this isn't the start they wanted, but you look at the Eastern Conference standings, like Philly is 14th. They're only three games out of a play-in spot right now. So like a good week for them or a good week and a half could just put them right in 10 or 9. Obviously, that isn't where they want to end up, but that at least gives them a launching pad to make a run if they're able to get a level of consistent health. So they're on the brain for me. Similar to that, want Tyrese Halliburton to get right. I think it's just a big thing for me. Like, as we've talked about the Pacers on here, like I've mostly focused on like, okay, what are the Pacers trying to do differently? What are defenses doing differently? Like I mentioned recently, they're seeing more full court pressure. Again, Tyrese has been more willing to just toss up those hit aheads when seeing that full court pressure, or even in transition, I'll just get rid of it. There is just a level of unselfishness that he already has. But I do also wonder like how much of that and some of the off-ball denials that he's seeing, how much of that is because I don't have the physical juice right now to really force the issue and get the ball back and really put my stamp on this. And so like, it's just keeping an eye on that portion, like how much of it is defense is doing things differently against Indy and against him versus how is he really feeling? Because like when we did the Heat Pacers game on League Pass, like it was encouraging to see him hunting some of these shots. And even the Friday game before that game wasn't the most efficient outing for him, but he did go 3 of 8 from 3. And it was, again, encouraging to me to see him hunting some pull-ups against drop, seeing him get into some of those sidestep threes. But it hasn't been the most efficient year for him inside the arc. It hasn't been the most efficient stretch for him inside the arc. Threes aren't falling. Teams are still putting him in action. I think he is working hard in that regard, but if he doesn't have the full range of movement, then it becomes even tougher to deal with that. And so again, like, I don't think the Pacers are going to reach their ceiling unless Tyrese Halliburton is healthy and right. And so just want to see that. And then beyond that, just some eyebrow raising things for me. Just, hey, Trae Young, Steve, how many shots do you think Trae Young's taken over the last four games?
18.
Well, it was 16 against Portland. It was 7 against the Kings. It was 12 against the Warriors. And it was 18 against the Bulls. And a lot of those came when the game was just kind of out of reach already. And so, like, for me, and watching most of those games in full, I'm trying to parse through how much of this is Trey just seeing extra attention and quickly deciding, like, I think that's what the Kings game was. Like, seven shot attempts just looks weird for Trae Young. But you see the first possession of the game, and this is Alex Len legitimately trapping him 30 feet from the basket. It's like, okay, well, if this is the coverage I'm going to get, I'm just going to get off the ball. And, like, I think there is something to Trey trusting his teammates a little bit more to make plays against these traps. But, like, I am starting to not necessarily worry, but, like, I'm more closely monitoring, like, what his balance of playmaking and scoring is. This is a career high in assists. This is a career low in two-point attempts. This is the lowest free throw attempt year for him since, I think, his second season in the league. He hasn't had the floater going to the same degree. He is seeing more help on his drives in light of some of the players that he's playing with. Like, as great as Dyson Daniels has been, like, it does give teams a help point for a quick example on that front. And so, like, just keeping an eye on the Trey balance when he has the ball in his hands, because obviously he's a good enough passer to just dice teams up if they're going to put two on the ball against them. But the Hawks do still need him to be like the 28-12 threat to really reach the full, you know, full breadth of what they can do.
The 28-12 threat?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he needs to have that blend of, like, scoring and playmaking, or high level scoring and playmaking.
Does he not?
I mean, scoring's down this year.
Is he averaging 22-11?
He is.
Almost 12?
Yeah, he's been very good.
Who else is doing that?
I think he's the only one, because he's leading the league in assists.
I think he'll be all right. How many assists did he have in that Kings game?
What was it, 17? Somewhere there.
It's a whole lot.
It is. Yeah, I'm not saying Trae Young is playing bad. It's just, hey, I don't want it to become... I don't want to word what I want to say. I guess there are some pockets where he can be a little bit more aggressive as a scorer. I think the playmaker is just always going to be there. And so, again, in light of this, like, recent stretch, and, like, there's even been some, like, Hawks chatter, like, hey, wait a minute, why isn't Trey attacking some of these matchups, like, specific pockets of games? Like, okay, why isn't he forcing the issue here when he normally would? Like, this could just be random regular season stuff. Like, I'm not saying there's anything definitive here. But, like, that's why, I want to watch this a little bit more closely, see what's happening here. What's up?
It's called growth.
Yeah.
It's growth. I don't have to take over by scoring. I can make plays.
That's fair.
I think he's fine.
That is fine. So, yeah, just keeping an eye on that. And then the other thing I just had is just Utah as a concept. Like, one, this just feels like the first year that they are just bad to start versus, hey, we are pesky and we're doing all this cool stuff and we are, like, a game over 500 for some reason. And then we tear it all down. So, like, one, it's just been an interesting pivot on that front. Like, they very much want to capture the flag, and that's fine. I'm also just trying to wrap my head around them just being the switchiest team in the NBA this year. They're switching over 38% of the pick and rolls that they've seen. They were 21st in switch rate last year. So that is quite literally a pretty big shift for them. And, like, some of the fun for me watching the Jazz-Knicks games over the weekend was like, hey, we're going to switch everything New York does. Let's see what you do. The Knicks saying, all right, well, if you're going to do that, Jalen Brunson, here's a pick and roll with Karl Anthony Towns. We're going to string this out, turn this into a late switch. Cat, you are now being defended by Colin Sexton. You are sealing. Here's a quick basket. Oh, cool. Let's go pick and roll. We're not going to explore it too much. Got a matchup you like. Let's turn this into an inverted pick and roll. Here's a cat bucket. And Utah immediately deciding, you know what? How about we continue doing the switching part? Let's actually do some scram switches now, because I don't like what New York is starting to do here. So just, like, punch, counterpunch, that kind of thing is kind of cool. So just kind of wrapping my head around the switching for Utah, and then looking at the front court in particular. Shouted out Walker Kessler not too long ago with what he's doing on the interior defensively. But John Collins has been really good. Welcome back to interior scoring, Lauri Markkanen. Like, he got a lot of cuts in that Knicks game, so that certainly helps. But over his last... I think this is the last five games, 21 of 28 inside the arc for Lauri Markkanen. And he was at a career low mark to start the season. So starting to see a little return to normalcy there. Obviously, again, the cuts in the half court is going to help, but he is looking better against switches. And I think the Jazz need that portion of the program, not to make a playoff push, but for Lauri to be this guy. Like, he has to have the 3-point shooting and also be able to punish mismatches. So it's good to see the return to form there. But Utah has just been an interesting watch for me over the last week or so. I think that will do it for me. Do you have any teams or who's confusing you as of late?
No one's confusing me.
Fair enough. We all hate the all-knowing. That's what it's all about right there.
I'm not the all-knowing. Yeah. I do have a couple of thoughts, though. Did you imagine the New York Knicks would basically become the Indiana Pacers from last year?
No. I sure did.
Number two in offensive rating, number 21 in defensive rating. I want to say Indiana was 2-25, something like that. It's interesting when you think about it. For me, with the Knicks defensively, I'm trying to see if they can grab a base, a stronger base that they can lean on. They're always going to have some size concerns, some scheme concerns at times, but there are moments and pockets where I'm looking, it's like there's no real ball pressure. You're not really pressuring the ball handler. Teams are comfortable running their offense. You have some really good defenders, but you're putting a lot of pressure on them to be active, be physical, deny passes, and that's opening things up for teams because we can see the whole floor. So, you know, cool denial. I'm just going to throw it and get a backdoor cut out of it. Mm-hmm. Teams are just comfortable at times running what they want to run, and that can work because you have some good defenders, but it's hard because if you're not impacting the ball handler, teams can run sets. You have those nights where you can't contain the drive. It just puts a lot of pressure on your ability to help and recover in a league where if you show help, we're starting to spray the ball, getting you in rotation, getting the shots we want. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see them clean up that base there. The Miami Heat are 7-7. Jimmy Butler has returned. 30 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists against Philadelphia. 33 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists against Dallas. 8 of the 15 games that the Miami Heat have played have been on the road. They are 4-4 in those. And now this is where I don't know if people have looked at their schedule, and I don't know if it's going to be a, well, Miami's cooked talk, or maybe this is iron sharpens iron. So they have a big game against Milwaukee, which will probably happen as you hear or watch this pod. It's at Charlotte, home against Toronto, then at Toronto. That's at Boston. And then the Miami Heat will at some point get their longest homestand of the season.
Okay.
It's a 4-game stretch, guys. Mm-hmm. At least the longest one so far. That 4-game stretch is the Lakers, the Suns, the Cavs, and the Thunder.
Oh. Was it just going to be 2-2 in the most annoying Heat fashion?
Yeah, we'll see. You never know with the Heat, but I just want to just keep an eye on the Heat schedule. My Milwaukee Bucks have won 7 of their last 10, which if you are a loyal dunker, exactly what they need to do during this stretch. Won 6 straight home games, won all 4 in the home stands. Keep an eye on them. Nikias, outside of Utah, New Orleans, every team in the Western Conference has a 500 or better record against teams below 500.
Wow.
Shout out to Steve Cook.
Taking care of business. There you go.
That's all I got.
Okay. Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Any players that you want to shout out?
Brandon Miller is averaging 33 points per game on 56% from the field, 55.9 from 3, and 100 from the line over his last 3 games. 7 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 2.3 steals, 1 block. Pretty good. Did you know RJ Barrett's 10th in the NBA in drives per game?
I did.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Who's 11th?
You want to pull this back up? Say someone No.
You know who's 12th then, bud? Come on, all knowing.
What do you mean, all knowing?
You better know someone else on this list without cheating. No, you're not getting away with the I did. No. Who's 12th?
I don't know who's 12th off the top of my head.
It's Cam Thomas. Who's first?
I'm trying to think. Is it
Shea Gilgeous Alexander? Come on, buddy.
Shea's in the top 10. Jaws in the top 10. Like we can roll it out. But again, I had like Trae Young drive stats in the notes that I just did not hit on. Now that I mentioned it, but that's why like I wasn't surprised with the RJ thing. I did literally see his name this morning. That's all. I wasn't trying to stunt.
Not a stunt, man. It's being a stunt. Russell Westbrook, his 200th triple double, the only player in NBA history to do such a thing. So.
Did you like the sign?
What sign?
He had the paper with 200, and then they apparently got slandered for that. And so then they had like the big poster board for 200.
Oh, okay. Got you.
That's a good bit.
Why'd they get slandered for it? Weren't they just trying to do a Wilt thing?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I don't understand this world anymore.
Nobody does, man. That's the scary part. But that's okay. That's okay. Did you have any other players that you want to shout out?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, then circling back to Jimmy Butler very quickly, you mentioned the 30-10-5 against Philly, the 33-9-6 against Dallas. He's 24 of 29 from free throw line over those two games, getting downhill. Has 8 offensive rebounds over those two games. And quietly, nearly averaging 3 offensive rebounds per game. I think that is a natural byproduct of like him being used as a screener more. You're getting those dives, get the switch, he gets the seal. If he isn't getting the ball, then it is just him versus a smaller player as the shot goes up. And you're seeing him kind of hunt some of those. So that part's been cool. As far as the screening goes, per second spectrum, it was 14 on-ball screens per 100 possessions. Well, it was 14 on-ball screens per 100 possessions this year. That's up from 11.5 from last year. 1.1 points per possession on any trip featuring a Jimmy Butler on-ball screen this year. It's been very good. The Heat have used him in double drag as the first screener or as the second screener to kind of get a switch. You've seen him screening for Tyler. Like before Terry went down, you saw some stuff sprinkled in there. In general, just getting him those matchups in the mid block, letting him attack there. So that part's been cool. OG Anunoby, he was someone that I had in my notes to shout out, I think, last week. And I was like, hey, actually, I'm just going to wait. He has continued to ball out. So I will shout out OG. A career high 17.8 points per game so far this year. 59% on twos, shooting 40% from three on volume. 5 boards, 2 assists, nearly 2 steals and a block. He is averaging 26-2. In November, and he's shooting 43% from three on higher volume. He has scored 20 or more in 3 of his last 5 games, including 27 points against Utah over the weekend, in which it felt like he was the only player for the Knicks that could make shots for large portions of that game. But obviously, the 3-point shooting is important. The defense has remained very good. And as you mentioned, the Knicks trying to find their level defensively as a team, he has been very good this year. He's probably been the most consistent member on that end. So I wanted to give him the shout out there. You mentioned Milwaukee already in the run. Quick shout out to Brook Lopez, 12 points, 5 boards, a career high 1.4 steals this year. But during the win streak, he's averaging 18-7, 2 steals and 2.3 blocks. He's shooting nearly 48% from three. The screening chemistry with Damian Lillard has continued. The Dame Brook pick and roll has the highest volume. That's the most fruitful pairing in the NBA in terms of just the total amount of picks they screen, or Brook screens for Dame a lot. You'll see them darn near at half court. You'll see some lower ones, but you're mixing in the roles. You have the pick and pops naturally. And now that Brook is knocking down shots, like that part has been pretty cool for Milwaukee's offense. Go ahead.
Okay, don't sleep on the Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo empty side pick and roll. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to say. It's getting better.
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. And those numbers remain pretty darn good. They were really good last year when they were still trying to work some stuff out. So to your point, it is encouraging that you can just empty aside and it feels that they have even more rhythm together. So you certainly want that part of the program there. Quick shout out to Andrew Wiggins, averaging 17 points, 4 boards, 2 assists, nearly a block. 4 straight games of 20 points for Andrew Wiggins. The mix of drives, pull-ups, and just catch and shoot shots has been there. The defense has rebounded. You know, shouted him out when we talked about the Warriors not too long ago, so I don't want to hang there too long. But worth noting that this has been a really good and consistent season for Andrew Wiggins so far. And the Warriors have needed every bit of it. Shout out Cam Johnson, who's averaging a career high 19 points per game. Career high 61% on twos, shooting 43% from three on high volume. 4 boards, a career high, nearly 3 assists per game. Something that shout out Lucas Kaplan, who's been kind of banging the drum on the Cam Johnson drives pretty much all year long. And he has been very good on those. Per second spectrum, it's 91 drives, 1.31 points per possession on any trip featuring a Cam Johnson drive, which is number one in the NBA among players that have logged at least 75 drives so far this year. Hey, Steve, you want to know who's second?
Who?
Ty Jerome, who has been very good for the Cleveland Cavaliers. That is my excuse to once again shout out Ty Jerome for what he's been able to do this year. But no, in all seriousness, Cam Johnson just looks so much more comfortable on the ball this year. Like, he's always been pretty solid attacking closeouts and just making basic reads from there. But like, he's dealt with contact a little bit better, starting to see a little bit more variety with some of the finishes. And again, you can shoot with this kind of volume. Got the spot up looks. They can run him off pin downs, run him off staggers. It's just been very good stuff for Cam Johnson. He's held up a little bit better defensively than we've seen in years past. And so I am intrigued to see if he just becomes, hey, we need to keep this guy because he's a wing that can shoot and defend and make some plays. He just fits with whatever this build is going to be. Or if some contenders come calling saying, hey, we could use a guy like that, can we get a first round pick or two for Cam Johnson? So that's going to be something worth monitoring. But Cam has been playing very well. A couple more wings slash fours to shout out, since that is just the theme outside of Brook Lopez for me. DeAndre Hunter, 18 points, four boards, and a little over a steal a game so far this year. He's only played six games so far. Would have been probably more fruitful for me to bring this up last week before he had the weekend stretch where he just missed threes. But it's been more process stuff for me with DeAndre Hunter. The thing that I have been most critical of with him has just been decision-making speed. If you are spaced on the perimeter, you catch the ball, immediately catch and shoot, immediately catch and drive, just make your decisions quicker. And through the first six games of the season, even with him basically pulling an 0 from three over the weekend, it has been a lack of hesitation for him. And like that just makes me happy, especially within the context of this Atlanta offense and their roster. So if he's going to defend, if he's going to knock down pull-ups, if he's going to be able to get downhill against closeouts, and if he's going to knock down threes, that's a fruitful player. And if he's going to make decisions quickly and help keep teams in rotation, that's even more fruitful for the Hawks moving forward. So I hope he keeps that part up. And the last name I have is Harrison Barnes. 11.5 points per game, career high, 59% on two, shooting 44% from three, which would also be a career high for him. Not the highest volumes, but he is knocking them down. Three straight games of 20 or more points for Harrison Barnes. I didn't have that on the bingo card, especially with this level of efficiency. The Spurs, coincidentally, have won their last three games, currently holding a play-in spot. I think they are 9-8. I think they're above 500 right now. So it's very cool seeing some of the transition finishes from Harrison Barnes. Obviously, again, hitting threes at a high clip. And I think he's really had some important like late clock buckets for San Antonio when things have got a little hazy. And so him being able to mix in some of these mid-post shots, being able to mix in some drives, a timely offensive rebound or two for him. It's been really good stuff for the Wiley vet. So I want to shout out Harrison Barnes.
Okay.
You seem surprised that I gave Harrison Barnes a
No, I'm not. I'm not surprised by that. Players I thought the guys would shout out, bring this bit back. Jalen Williams, Scottie Pippen Jr., Tari Eason. Let's see. Who else? Charles Bassey, Tyus Jones, and Isaac Okoro on my short list of people I thought Nekias would shout out.
Well, I think two of those were players that I shouted out last week, I want to say. So I didn't want to circle back, even though I did exactly that with Ty Jerome, but that's neither here nor there.
What a sentence you just put together there, pal. What?
I contain multitudes. No, but
okay, all right. Jesus, I was trying to get free throws on the pod. I'm gonna ask you a question.
What's up?
Among players who have at least three clutch games played this season, do you know who ranks first and second in the NBA in clutch points per game?
I'm gonna say LaMelo and DeMar,
Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons.
Oh wow, would not have. Wow, shout out Portland, man.
Shout out to the Blazers, and I am gonna shoehorn these in. You just got to deal with it. Okay. Sorry, bud. Stronger all-star case, LaMelo Ball or Trae Young?
Darn, that's a good one.
I know.
Gosh darn it. Because one of those, like, where I think Trae is better, but probably LaMelo's.
Okay. Stronger all-star case, Jaylen Brown or Franz Wagner?
Well, it's incredibly petty work on your part. I will say, you look at some of these numbers, it gets kind of funny. I'll probably say Jaylen. You get the team success bump as well. So I'll say Jaylen, who has been very good for Boston, to be clear. I'll say Jalen, slightly better all-star case.
Stronger all-star case, Julius Randle or Domantas Sabonis?
I'm going to be annoying real quick. How many games did Sabonis miss during that stretch?
Sabonis still had 15 games.
Okay. I was about to say, depending on what that is, that may end up being a Randle by default. I'll go Sabonis.
Stronger all-star case, Jalen Williams or Victor Wembanyama?
I
brought the boom.
I don't like this. I'd probably say like Jalen and seven. I think they probably both make it, but I'll go Jalen. He's really had to put in some work defensively this year. The offense has still been very good.
Okay. Okay. I respect it. Ooh, can I get one more out of you?
I don't know, Steve. Can you?
Probably. Hmm. Is that a challenge?
I believe in you, GOAT. You got this.
Oh, okay. All right. I know what you are.
You go, I know what you are is crazy.
I know what you are.
That's nasty work.
Stronger coach of the year case, Steve Kerr or Mark Dadno?
Ooh. Ooh-wee. See, here's a really good question. Because here's the thing. It's like Steve Kerr had to do it without Steph for a little bit. And Mark Dagno has largely done this without centers as a concept. And the records are very similar. So, I mean, Dagnault?
Okay. All right. And then let's end this on a bang. Stronger coach of your case, Ime Udoka, or the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers?
That is incredible. Because Houston is still just top 10 in both, right? Because I could literally just verify that with a click real quick. The Houston Rockets, per clean the glass, they are 10th in offense, 2nd in defense. Houston had, I will lean Houston.
All right, hit our final outro, Jack.
That's crazy. Nasty work. Thank you for listening to and or watching apparently the final episode of the Tucker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe, or I guess, you know, if this is the last one, who's to say? But we are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us.
It hasn't been on Google for months!
This is why I said RIP. You know what? I'm not doing this with you. Yeah, you can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. Steve also has an account. He does not want you to follow him, though. You can look if you'd like. It's in my following. So if you wanna not listen to Steve, then you can also just do that. But beyond that, join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties if you haven't already. We are watching Hoop. You have a League Pass subscription. You can see the games on screen. We're breaking things down. We're live reacting to things.
Click the link.
The link is in the podcast description. It is free to create your profile. So do that. Come hang with us. We also have some randomness going on. We'll toss on some wrestling on screen. We'll do some college football 25.
You're giving up Fortnite. The secrets.
Okay. Well, I can't say anything else or Steve will yell at me once again. But come to the room. Come hang with us. Come have some fun. And with that, we will hopefully catch y'all later in the week.
Nikias, acknowledge me.
That was shy.